think it's time to give you the Bible reading then. So the reading today is taken from Genesis chapter 39, verses 4 to 21. So I'll just give you a few moments to find that in your Bibles. So that's Genesis chapter 39, verses 4 to 21. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he wouldn't listen to her, to lie beside her or be with her. But one day when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house were there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he'd left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he's brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you've brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Today I've been given the task of talking about lust as part of the series on the seven deadly sins. Now, lust isn't an easy topic to talk about. It's quite a big topic. I think it's something that many of us struggle with in one way or another, but probably in quite different ways, actually. We all have very different issues here, and I don't think I stand really much chance of dealing with this topic in its entirety, in its fullness, and dealing with every little kind of nook and cranny of the problem. So bear with me a bit. As I try and work my way through this. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to use today's passage as a sort of backbone to sort of help us think about some of the issues around lust and how to deal with lust. And I think actually as well, one thing to bear in mind as we approach this topic is that if we're actually kind of trying to deal with lust, we need to make sure that we also have a positive account of sex and sexuality. And that's something that I think, at least historically, churches haven't been that great at doing. But there's a fundamental point there, which is that you can't really hope to deal with the sin, be it lust or whatever else, if you don't have a positive vision of the thing that the sin is corrupting. And getting a positive vision of sex and sexuality and sexual desire, for some of us, might be a pretty hard business. So we'll leave that there, and we'll come back to that in a bit. But first of all, let's have a think about what lust actually is. So dictionary.com, that authority on the internet, says lust is either intense sexual desire or appetite, or uncontrolled or illicit sexual desire or appetite. So basically, it's misdirected sexual desire, the desire to use sex in the wrong way, which may or may not lead, I suppose, to actually using sex in the wrong way. Now, the Bible teaches a fair few things about sex, sexual desire, sexuality. And I think it can be summed up basically that sex is to be used in marriage, in the context of a committed, loving relationship between a man and a woman. At least that's where the Apostle Paul seems to land in 1 Corinthians. Admittedly, the Bible takes a while to get to that point through Old Testament polygamy and some rather strange and actually quite abusive practices in marriage at various points. But the final word seems to be the place of sex is in the context of a committed, loving relationship between a man and a woman. Lust is the desire to use sex outside of that context. And unfortunately, there's a big but here, which is that the world that we live in, the culture that we live in, lands in a very different place on this matter. In fact, I think most people in our society would probably see lust as something that's basically pretty natural and probably even pretty healthy. There are a few boundaries in our society about how sexual desire and sex should be used. And generally, those things are concerned not so much with commitment and committed loving relationship, but more about consent, which, I mean, at least that's there, you know, I mean, that's a good thing, because it prevents the abuse of the vulnerable. But we don't necessarily connect sex and sexual desire with commitment and relationship. Adverts don't, when they use sex to sell things, whether on the television, on billboards, on the internet. They use lust to persuade us certain products are cool. There's more sexual imagery in our society than probably in virtually any society in history. If you think about all of the forms of media that we have, whether it's the TV, the internet, our phones, films, even books and magazines, we've got a lot of access to sexualized content that previous generations simply didn't have. And most of the folk around us think that that's simply normal. You know, maybe we do. And for most folk around us, the place of sex, just saying that the place of sex is in marriage, it seems a bit crazy, certainly a bit boring and a bit restrictive, just not very much fun. You know, come on, get out there and live a bit, says our society. Today's reading is from Genesis 39. But first of all, let's use that passage to get a picture of what lust is like. And I think we can learn three things about it. First, that lust is about externality rather than real relationship and love. And then, because of that, it's often connected with the abuse of power. Finally, lust brings chaos where God has brought order and blessing. And once we've thought about what lust is like, then we need to think about how to avoid giving into it, how to avoid giving into it as a temptation, how to deal with that and give a positive account of sexuality. And then third, we also need to think about how to live in a culture that thinks lust is fine. So, first of all, let's have a think about what lust actually looks like. You know, we can ask a few extra questions here. You know, it might be natural, it might be gratifying to fulfill our sexual desires, but is it actually good for us? And in order to answer those questions, let's go to the very beginning of today's passage. Now, these verses set the scene for the events of today's passage. They tell us that Joseph found favor in the sight of Potiphar and attended him. And Potiphar made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So the picture that we get from these two verses is that Joseph is a very good manager. And in the house of Potiphar, there is order. Everything's in order. Everything is as it should be. And the greatest expression of that ordering is the fact that the Lord's blessing is upon the house of Potiphar and all that belongs to Potiphar. In verse 6, this picture of rest and stability and ordering continues. It says that Potiphar left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. So what we have here is good order, peace, stability, blessing. Everything is as it should be. And then we read that Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And in verse 7, it tells us that after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." So this is where lust enters the picture, right? Basically, Potiphar's wife likes the look of Joseph and decides that she wants to, well, basically have sex with him. And the first thing to say about this is that Potiphar's wife isn't really very bothered about Joseph's character and abilities. You know, she doesn't seem to sort of actually love him particularly or want a deep relationship with him. She just likes the look of him. At least as far as that's what we can tell from the passage. Sexual desire takes the upper hand over the peace, stability, blessing, and good order of her house. She doesn't care that through Joseph the Lord has brought blessing on her house. As far as she is concerned, the key point is that he was handsome in form and appearance. And that's the nature of uncontrolled sexual desire. It pays attention to external things. It's not bothered about real relationship. It's not bothered about any bigger picture that there may be. It just wants physical gratification right now. Now, I think if we're honest with ourselves, there are times when pretty much probably all of us have to fight some kind of desire like this for physical gratification in the here and now. I have to say, I certainly do. So, you know, I think that it's a normal thing. It doesn't mean it's a good thing. I'm sure that among us there are folk who struggle with this in different ways, whether it's sleeping around or watching inappropriate stuff on the TV or the internet or reading bodice rippers or whatever else. But remember that lust is all about externals, and giving into it means losing sight of really valuable things. It means losing sight of real relationship, losing sight of God's orderings and blessing in our life. Lust doesn't bring peace or joy. It only brings momentary gratification that just requires more and more gratification. If you give in to it, you feel like you're being sucked into a hole. Now, you know, if that's us, there are ways out of that hole. Turning to the Lord in repentance and asking for his help, because the Lord can give us help with this. You know, he can give us the strength to fight with this, even when it seems that it's impossible to fight with. And then, you know, another thing would be to get a few Christian friends to help support you if you're struggling with something. That's not a bad idea. Because lust is focused on externalities rather than real relationship or really seeing value in another person, because of that, lust often ends up connected with the use and abuse of power. And we also see that in today's passage in the actions of Potiphar's wife. By acting on her lust, Potiphar's wife is abusing the power that she has over Joseph. And you see, in the ancient world, a slave like Joseph would have been seen as the property of his master or mistress. He was basically like an object. You know, Potiphar's wife could, in theory, do anything she liked with him. Whether Potiphar would have approved of her lying with him is another matter, but as far as she's concerned, she's the mistress of the house, and she's able to do what she likes. In theory, Joseph didn't even have the right to refuse her request for him to lie with her. He has no rights and no power in this situation. And in fact, in refusing her request, Joseph is doing something really quite revolutionary. He's, in a sense, appealing way beyond the external situation of his life, beyond the power structures of which he is a part, to a God who has high standards for how sex and sexual desire is to be used. He's appealing to a God who sees far deeper than the external things, a God who really sees who Joseph is and wishes to bless him. And this connection between lust and the abuse of power and the manipulation of weaker individuals by the powerful, this isn't something that only took place in the ancient world. In fact, in some ways, it's probably even worse now. If you think about Hollywood abuse scandals, Jimmy Savile, the sex industry, this goes far beyond the actions of Potiphar's wife. when she tries to manipulate Joseph. There's huge amounts of manipulation and coercion and basically horrible things going on in this world. Unfortunately, this kind of stuff even happens in churches from time to time, with priests and pastors of various denominations inveigled in horrific abuse scandals. And it needs to be said, all of this abusive behavior is something that God hates. We need to avoid it like the plague, you know, not get into this stuff in the first place, not give in. We need to, as Christians, to know where we need help. You know, we need to be honest about our struggles. And then also as a church, you know, we need to have appropriate safeguarding practices in place. So that's lust. And this is a pretty dark picture of what lust is and where it leads to. But going back to this passage, we also need to deal with maybe one of the most fundamental characteristics of lust, and that is that it brings chaos where there should be order. In Genesis 39, because of Joseph, everything in Potiphar's house works, and it's blessed by God. But now something very different is about to happen. Things are about to go badly in this house, and the reason for that is lust. Joseph makes this very clear in verses 8 to 9. Joseph refused to lie with his master's wife and said to her, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in his house, and he's put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" You see, lying with Potiphar's wife is a great wickedness, not just against Potiphar, but against God. And that's not because God is a spoilsport or because he doesn't want you to enjoy yourself, but because by acting on this lustful desire, Joseph and Potiphar's wife would be introducing chaos into God's good order. They'd be rejecting God's blessing by misusing what God has given them. And similar things are true about sex and sexual desire in our lives. You know, in a number of places in the Bible, God makes it clear that sex is for marriage, as I said earlier. The place of sex is in the context of commitment of one person to another. In 1 Corinthians 6 and 7, those two chapters, Paul gives a series of instructions to the Corinthian church about the correct place of sex and sexual desire. He says, because of the temptation to sexual immorality, which is basically lust in another name, or letting sexual desire take control of you, because of that, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights and likewise the wife to her husband. A bit further on, he says, do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Then a bit further on, he says that if you cannot exercise self-control, you should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion. And you see, for Paul, sex is a good thing, but it is given for marriage, for a committed relationship between a husband and wife. In marriage, it builds relationships and is a beautiful thing. But if you let your passions take control of you, if you let lust get the better of you, like Potiphar's wife, and misuse sex and sexuality, then it brings chaos into God's ordering of the world. It brings chaos into your life. Where there might have been peace and God's blessing, there is chaos and trouble and depression in its place. Now, the world that we live in basically says that lust is fine, that it's natural. And certainly, you know, it's something that I think many of us do struggle with. I certainly do. But if we let these things take control of us, then they can cause chaos for us. They could cause chaos in our lives. Our houses become places of chaos, not order. And it could cause chaos in our societies, in our churches. So, what does lust look like in summary? Well, it's paying attention to external things only for the sake of gratification, which means that it comes to be connected with power and manipulation. And all of this means that lust has the potential to bring chaos into a house that God has put in order. Let's not bring chaos into our own houses, but let's get a good, positive vision for what sex and sexual desire are for, not use them destructively. So, the next thing I want to talk about is how to deal with lust. I mean, I suspect that it's something that pretty much all of us experience in one way or another. We're made that way, and God has good plans for that sexuality and those desires that we have. But I think for all of us, there are ways in which we find that desire challenging. It might be that, you know, we're single, we feel like we'd like a relationship with someone, and our sexual desires are not finding fulfillment. It might be that we struggle to keep that stuff under control in our lives. And those desires come, you know, maybe to sleep with someone, look at bad stuff on the internet, or just find fulfillment by watching TV, films, or reading romantic novels. Whatever it is, I think we all struggle with this stuff. So let's see what we can do to stop lust in its tracks, to stop ourselves from being taken over by these sexual desires and let them control our lives. What can we do to rein in the chaos in our lives and live our sexuality in a way that's pleasing to God? Well, I suppose the example that Joseph gives is of someone who's not prepared to give in, someone who's resolute and also keen to flee from temptation. And verse 10 tells us that as Potiphar's wife spoke to Joseph day after day, he wouldn't listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. Of course, we don't know whether Joseph even found Potiphar's wife attractive. We don't know whether he even wanted to lie with her. If he didn't, you know, lying with her might have given him quite a bit of power over that house and that household. But there's no doubt of him giving in to this, despite the pressures that his master's wife was undoubtedly able to put on him. In verses 11 to 12, everything reaches its culmination. We're told that one day, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house were there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. He continued to refuse her and ran away so quickly that he left his garment with Potiphar's wife. This she was able to use against him, as we'll see in a moment. But the important thing here is that Joseph was consistent in rejecting lust, and he ran away from temptation. Now, what Joseph demonstrates is consistency and the need to flee temptation. And I'm sure that this is something that God gives him the strength to do by his grace. You know, it's not something that's easily done, I think. I think we need to pray for similar strength because, you know, we're weak. But it's an important matter. If we give in to lust, if we get into the habit of giving in to it, then we run into trouble. We need to give ourselves instead good habits. And the only way of doing that is by being consistent. You know, if we've already got bad habits, how can we get into the right habits? Well, this is where it's quite helpful to maybe hold yourself accountable to others. Either that or take concrete steps to avoid being tempted. You know, I mean, an example of that might be to install blocking or accountability software on your computer or to stop going to clubs or other contexts where you might be tempted. Stop reading or watching material that you find unhelpful. All those things are good things to do, as well as, of course, turning to God in prayer and asking him to help, asking him for his strength. For some of us, the answer following Paul might be to get married and to live out our sexuality in the context that God has provided for us. But for many others, there will be very real reasons why it's not possible to get married. For one thing, you might be same-sex attracted. You might be in a place in life where it's difficult to commit to that kind of relationship, or you might just not have found the right person. And the thing is, Joseph actually is in that situation in today's passage. He's not able to get married because he's a slave. He belongs to his master. He doesn't have the freedom to start his own family. Who knows where God will lead him in the future at this point? You know, of course, we later in the story read that he does get married and has children. But it's not clear that that's going to happen at this point in the story. He doesn't know that it's going to happen. But even so, he gives us a model of how to deal with sex and sexual desire. You see, Joseph knows that he must reject the advances of Potiphar's wife, not only because this is just about sexual gratification and power, but because he knows that giving in will bring chaos into God's order. You see, even if we can't see a clear way through to sexual fulfillment, giving in to lust isn't going to help resolve the problem. It may well be that God will bless us in the future in a way we can't currently imagine. But even if he doesn't, giving in to lust is not the best option. When lust raises its head in our lives, like Joseph, we need to respond decisively and consistently. Like Joseph, we need to be dependent on our God. We need to pray to God for help. That for the strength, you know, for him to give us the strength to make the right decisions. Sometimes that's hard, and most of us will have messed up in this area at some point. But when we fail, we need to turn to the Lord, to trust in God and trust in his strength. Now, finally, I want to talk a little bit about how to stand up for sexual purity in the face of a society that sees lust as natural and normal. And that's anything but easy. How do we do it? Well, if we go back to today's passage once again, we can see that Potiphar's wife doesn't take rejection very well. She decides to take revenge on Joseph for his rejection of her advances. Of course, from her perspective, Joseph's rejection wasn't just personally offensive, but also a challenge to her authority as his mistress. And from verse 13, we can read, "And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, 'See, he,'" presumably Potiphar, "her husband, "'has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as I heard that, I lifted up my voice and cried out. He left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you've brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house.'" So she basically accuses Joseph of attempting to rape her and blames her husband for bringing this Hebrew into the house in the first place. Nothing could be further from the truth, of course. But here we see the power dynamics going on behind lust in their full glory. Not only is she able, through this situation, to get personal revenge on Joseph for denying her gratification, but she gets one over her husband Potiphar, who's brought this Hebrew slave into the house and caused trouble by doing so. And then from verse 19, we read that Potiphar got angry and had Joseph put in prison. Now, we don't actually know why Potiphar was angry. I mean, maybe it seems obvious, right, that this is the reaction of a jealous husband. But in reality, it might well be more about the abuse of status, the idea that a slave is making fun of his wife. In fact, the Bible passage itself seems to suggest that that is the reason why he's angry. He might even be angry because his wife is blaming him for bringing the slave into his house. And there are a number of options here. At the same time, this is an interesting one, that there's good reason to believe that the prison where Potiphar sends Joseph is actually Potiphar's house. It's actually in Potiphar's house, under his control. We're told in 39 verse 1 that he's captain of the guard. And the keeper of the prison in 39:22 might well be none other either than Potiphar himself, or at least someone under Potiphar's command. And what's the result of all of this? Well, the result is chaos and disorder in Potiphar's house. But where Joseph went, the prison, he took blessing and order with him. You see, Joseph was put in charge of all the prisoners and brought order into the prison. And what can we learn from that? Well, the first thing is that if we insist on standing up for the right use of sex and sexual desire in a society that thinks that lust is normal, we're quite likely to find ourselves running into trouble. You know, people might see you with suspicion, might not understand why you don't think like them. They might well see us even as those annoying people who want to stop them from enjoying themselves. I mean, this isn't true, of course, right? We just, you know, if we're following what God teaches, then we just know what sex is really for, and hopefully we can stick to that and actually find joy in it. But anyway, if we insist on doing what God has called us to do, if we insist on using sex in the way that he has called us to use it, life might become difficult for us in our society. And life was difficult for Joseph when he rejected the advances of Potiphar's wife. And it didn't look like anything good would ever come out of his faithfulness. But you see, when Joseph is sent to prison, the immediate result is that order is brought to the prison. And although we might be rejected or misunderstood by those around us, if we're faithful to God, will gradually also bring order into the middle of chaos, just like Joseph in prison. And that's something I think we need to hold on to. Giving into lust, giving into a society that sees lust as natural, will result in chaos, both personal chaos and societal chaos. Standing firm and using sex and sexual desire in the way God has intended will, at least in the long run, result in order and God's blessing. And who knows what blessings God has in store for us in the future. Let's not do away with the chance of obtaining those blessings because we seek gratification and the external fulfillment of our desires in the here and now. And there's one final thing to say, which is very important. And that is that Joseph, in this story, looks forward to one who would come later. The story of Joseph looks forward to the story of Jesus Christ. In fact, the unjust suffering of Joseph because of Potiphar's wife looks forward to the unjust suffering of Jesus Christ on the cross. Joseph, through his faithfulness, was able in the end to bring order not just to Potiphar's house, not just the prison, but to the entire nation of Egypt and beyond. Jesus, through his faithfulness to the call of the Father, suffered and died for us in order to do away with the chaos of our sin in our lives, and in order to bring the order and peace of his kingdom in us, in our society, in our world. If we're prepared to reject the hold of lust consistently and decisively in our lives, despite living in a society that thinks lust is fine, then we must do that in the power of Jesus Christ who died for us. If we just try very hard to do that, it won't work. But if we do that in the power of Jesus Christ, it will work. And we take part in his sufferings, in the sufferings of Christ, walking the way of the cross. And that will finally bring order to our lives, to our church, to our society, and finally to the world that Jesus has redeemed. So, in summary, let's remember that lust is bad because it's about external things. It's connected with the use and abuse of power, and it brings chaos where there should be order. Let's remember that in dealing with it, we need to be decisive and consistent and depend on the grace of God. But let's also remember that it's Jesus, by his death on the cross and by his grace, who enables us to be strong, who enables us to walk in his way. Let's remember that he has defeated chaos and brought order. Let's walk with him towards that time when we will be with him in his kingdom. Let's pray. Father, this topic is a difficult one. It's a broad one. We all struggle with it in different ways. Lord, help us. Help us to live and walk in the strength that you give us, to not give in to the temptations that the world throws at us that come from within our own hearts, Lord. Help us to turn to you and learn to use sex and sexuality and sexual desire in the right way, in the way that you've called us to do. Where it's confusing as to how that is to happen, Lord, I pray that you would give us clarity, that you would lead us, through to a place where we know your presence with us, where we know that you love us more deeply than anything, Lord. And I pray that you would help us to use what you've given us to reflect that love among us with one another. In your name we pray. Amen.